According to the National Cancer Institute, prostate cancer is the most common cancer and second leading cause of cancer death among men here in this country. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Visiting now with Dr. Tracy Downs about prostate cancer. He's a physician, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, director of the Bladder Cancer and Intravesical Therapy Program. We'll be talking about screening, treatments, and research, and of course, taking your questions and comments. What would you like to know about PSA screenings? What questions might you have about prostate cancer diagnosis? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Dr. Tracy Downs, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, of course, Larry. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
You know, I've had a couple of relatives have prostate cancer, which in both those cases, things have worked out fine. But why do so many men get prostate cancer?
Yeah, it's a great question. So prostate cancer is almost a disease of aging. So if you look back, I would say almost 30 years ago, there were a group of pathologists who would, when someone passed away, they would actually take certain organs, in this case the prostate, and they would look for the signs of cancer. And they actually found that roughly about 80% of men in their 80s had prostate cancer, 70% of men in their 70s. But what we've gotten a lot smarter about lately is that some of these little cancers are not actually significant enough that they would cause anyone harm, and those are the ones that we don't have to detect. But it's a lot of aging, it's some inflammation that happens in the prostate that may lead to cancer. But thank goodness we're better at able to detect which cancers need treatment and which ones we can just follow, and patients have great outcomes.
Yeah. You know, a recent report from the UW Cancer Health Disparities Initiative showed that African-American men in Wisconsin, I think, are like 71% more likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer and die of it than white men. What's going on there?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. And so African-American men for, over two decades, if not more, have always had a higher incidence rate, and that's the rate of being diagnosed with prostate cancer, than their white male counterparts. But they've also had poorer outcomes in terms of dying earlier from their disease. And so when we've looked with our group, the Cancer Health Disparities Initiative group within the Carbone Cancer Center, we've seen that these national trends of African-American men being more likely to be diagnosed and die are even more disparate in our own state of Wisconsin.
And we don't know why.
Well, it's a good question. It's a multitude of reasons. So while an easy answer would be to say the biology, there has not really been a clear-cut paper that really says that. There's some inklings to suggest it. But a lot has to do with PSA screening, which is not always offered as often to African-American men. It has to do with being insured or uninsured and not being able to get the care or even the test to be diagnosed. And then when African-American men are diagnosed at equal rates, and this comes from our military data in the uniform health services where you think there's equal access to care, we found that African-American men versus white counterpart men still had outcomes that were not as well. And some of that had to do with not only their utilization of the care offered, but also the choices they were given. They were less likely to be given curative treatments such as surgery or radiation therapy, more likely to be given a medication that lowers their testosterone to kind of control the cancer but not cure it.
Oh, well, that could be a whole other show. What causes prostate cancer?
Yeah, there are definitely some risk factors. Some are diet related. There isn't a gene that we can hang our hat on, like in breast cancer, that we can say. So it tends to be aging, inflammation, some dietary things. But we know that the demographics, that there is definitely a higher rate in African-American men. And we see that not only in the USA, but we see it in other countries, definitely Africa, in the Caribbean, and countries like Trinidad and Tobago, incredibly high rates of prostate cancer.
You mentioned dietary, and Madeline in De Pere has a question or comment that relates to that. So let's go to Madeline. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I wanted to ask you the role of vitamin D in any kind of cancer, especially for dark-skinned people, and just brain development, everything. And would you please clarify, it's my understanding that vitamin D should not be called a vitamin at all. It's actually a hormone. And it's minus, and I know that many general practitioners do not blood test for vitamin D. And
okay, well, let's. Madeline, I'm glad you called. Let's see if Dr. Tracy Downs has some comments about vitamin D.
Yeah, I'll do my best. I'm not a nutritionist by any stretch, but Madeline, you raise a great point, and actually, UW is very famous for the whole vitamin D story in terms of isolating the vitamin. And so, you know, we could kind of, tease hairs about, is it a vitamin, is it a hormone? You could go back and forth. But I think, having one nomenclature, maybe just not to confuse people, at least for the purposes of this show, I'll keep calling it a vitamin. There's a lot of data to show that there are geographic variations in terms of vitamin D, because it ends up being the sunshine vitamin. And so in our northern latitudes, i.e. like here in Wisconsin, we have lower rates of vitamin D exposure through the sunlight and our northern exposure than in the southern parts of our country. There definitely has been some linkage to low vitamin D levels and higher risk of prostate cancer, and those have been kind of elucidated in African-American men. Having darker pigmented skin definitely puts you at risk in terms of not having as well of vitamin D absorption. Now, one thing that listeners should be aware of, too, is that the way that vitamin D is measured traditionally may actually lead to a false positive in terms of a low rate of vitamin D in African-American men, and there may be a different way to measure that to find out if that's accurate. But yes, there is indeed a link between low vitamin D levels and prostate cancer. The men who are more at risk are those with dark pigmented skin, i.e. African-American men, and it's something that if you are low, you should be supplemented for not only prostate cancer, but more importantly for the just benefits of having vitamin D in terms of your overall health.
How do we test for the amount of vitamin D? Is it a blood test of some sort? Or?
It is. It's a blood test that we do. And it's not a fasting one. You just you don't have to not eat after midnight. You can just come in and get the blood drawn, and then we measure it that way. And there's a different assay. I'm probably going to forget the exact name of it, that you can do specifically for African American men to get a more accurate measure.
You know, we had Orville from Madison who called in, couldn't hang on, but wondered how prevalent prostate cancer is among Asian men.
Oh, good question. Yeah, so when we look at prevalence, it's definitely, if we look at total numbers, because we have a larger population in this country of Caucasian or white men, it's highest in them. Then we would see African American. Then we would see Latino or Hispanic. And then we would actually see Asian at the lower rate. Now, going back to the part about diet, and where the kind of the Asian question is interesting regarding that. There's been some studies done, I want to say maybe the 1990s or early 2000s, looking at first generation versus second generation Asian immigrants who now had kind of adopted a Western diet, and unfortunately started to see that the second generation started to have a slight bump or increase in their risk of prostate cancer. But normally for Asian men, they have a very low rate of prostate cancer, but they also do have a lot of healthcare disparities, definitely in our state, compared with our white male counterparts and just Asian folks in general do when you look at healthcare disparities.
And thanks again, Orville, for that particular question. Appreciate your calls. There are a number of ways to screen for prostate cancer. The PSA screening, that's become a little controversial, by the way. Has it not?
Yeah, it sure has. Yeah, so you definitely kind of pick the muddy waters for sure. So, it's what I think about prostate cancer, and it's interesting when you think about being more of a student, and from my span of when I was in medical school, graduating in 93, and now being in practice after training almost 15 years, is that we really have kind of aired our dirty laundry right in front of the public. It's been in press, it's been in radio shows, TV shows, where we've shown like what we do know, what we don't know, and so it goes back and forth. But the most current recommendations are really geared towards us not over-diagnosing and possibly over-treating. And so the recommendations now are to wait. It used to be wait until you're age 50 to get screened for all men, and that would be a yearly PSA every year. And for high-risk men, African-American, or those with a family medical history, you would then start to screen at age 40, but those recommendations have changed. The way they've changed is we say now that roughly at about age 50, 55, you should start to get a PSA. And then we're saying based on that initial PSA, if that level is lower than, threshold of one for sure, some may even have that number as high as two, that then you can skip a year. And we go up to the age of roughly about 70. When you get above 70, and the reason for this is because the life expectancy for men above 70 is often less than 10 years, we recommend not to check the PSA anymore, but to have a detailed conversation with that patient. So if that patient said, I have two brothers who are lived into their 90s, then that might be a different story.
All right. Well, at that point, hold on to that thought, Dr. Downs. We're going to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with our guest, Dr. Tracy Downs. Stay with us. We're taking a look at prostate cancer on the show today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us. Our guest, Dr. Tracy Downs. He's a physician, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's director of the Bladder Control and Intravesical Therapy Program. And maybe you've been diagnosed with prostate cancer. What would you like to know about it? You can be part of our conversation. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Downs, we were talking about PSA tests as we were breaking for news. Anything to add to that? I know I wanted to ask you about the elevated, an elevated PSA level, what it might mean and so forth, but maybe you could add to that.
Yeah, no, thanks, Larry, for bringing that up. And we were leaving off on maybe who not to screen for. Maybe I'll pick up there for our listeners. So in the American Urology Association, who is my professional association, recommends that for men that are greater than 70 years old who have less than a 10-year life expectancy to not screen for prostate cancer. So hopefully men have been involved in prostate cancer screening up before that time, but let's say someone has not, and a 71 or 72-year-old male showed up or, you know, came and talked to your primary care physician, the recommendation would be not to screen unless that person said that, oh, yeah, I've got two brothers who are, you know, they're 98 or something. Then we would say, okay, let's have a shared decision-making conversation. And kind of the meat of where we should screen is really for men who are 55 to 69 years old, and they should get a PSA test. And instead of it being every year, now our guidelines are recommending that that interval can be every 2 years, depending on if it comes back in a normal range.
Okay.
And that normal value is usually less than 4.
And the normal value less than 4, what? And if it's above the normal value, an elevated?
Yeah, what would the next step be?
Yeah,
so if the PSA value was above 4, then we the possibilities could be from an enlarged prostate, from prostate cancer. It could be from infection. So the prostate-specific antigen test is not specific, and so it doesn't equal cancer. And so the next step is to go ahead and do what's called a prostate biopsy, where we get tissue from the prostate, and then we can look under the microscope to see if there's cancer present or not.
We have some callers on the line. I want to go to Paul in Green Bay and see what's on Paul's mind. Paul, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Thank you, Larry and Dr. Downs. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2014. I think I'm an Agent Orange case with exposure to the Agent Orange. Anyway, I had the surgery, the Da Vinci surgery, and everything seemed to be okay, but I had a reoccurrence within about a year and a half. We let the PSA slowly rise so we could get some scans. I did have a 3T scan and an Oxymen scan. My Gleason score, unfortunately, is a 9, so I think I'm on the aggressive type of a case here. But I'm on Eligard right now. I finished some radiation treatment this summer. What I'm interested in is the Eligard. I can handle the side effects, but it sure does wreck quality of life. There's this something called bipolar androgen therapy. I got a little bit of information on it, but it seems to be only in clinical trials at this time. Could you give me an update on that? Is that something I could look forward to in the future?
Paul, thanks for calling. Dr. Downs, what have you got about that?
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing your story. It is really helpful to all. I know of our listeners, so I thank you for your courageousness in sharing that. So a couple points to make, and then I'll try to get to the bipolar ADT, which stands for androgen deprivation therapy. So when you get the biopsy score, the person who came up with it, Dr. Gleason, was a pathologist at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. And so you get two scores, kind of like in the Olympics where you get different scores for a diving score. And the first score is the most prominent pattern of cancer. The second score is the second most. And you add them up. And when we add them up, we call it a summary score. And so scores that are 6 or lower are less aggressive cancers. And for our caller, a score of 9, it's actually a 9 out of 10. So he's in the high realm. So with these cancers, unfortunately, it's not surprising that you need more than one treatment. So the surgery followed by radiation is not too unexpected, and those together can be very successful. He's had a couple scans to make sure it has not traveled to his bone. Prostate cancer kind of loves to go to the bone, and it sounds like that's normal. And then the Eligard has a lot of different names. The kind of scientific name is Leuprolide, and it's a hormone-lowering medicine that lowers your testosterone. And that's where, for men, the quality of life really suffers. So we see that as the estrogen and testosterone balance in men becomes low on the testosterone side, you can become fatigued, you can get weight gain, you can be moody, you can be emotional, you can be a lot of different things that are not your normal baseline. Plus, your lipids can get very high. And so the bipolar ADT is not something we do here at the Carbone Cancer Center. So I can't really speak too much about that. But the good news is that there are a lot of great therapies out there that are more chemotherapy-derived and newer agents that are terrific, that extend life for men for many, many years to come. So he's got a long life expectancy would be what I would expect. This is not going to be something that he has short, just a few years.
And, Chad, again, I thank you so much for calling and sharing your story with us. Appreciate it very much. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 with perhaps your own story or perhaps a question. We'd certainly love to hear from you as we visit with Dr. Tracy Downs. Mike in Eau Claire has something for us. Mike, thank you for calling.
Yeah, Larry, I had prostate cancer surgery 14 years ago. I had my prostate removed. The point I want to make is my PSA number for years had been less than 0.5. And one year it was 1.0, nothing was made of that. The next year it was 2.5. And my internal medicine doctor was clever enough to be concerned about that. I went to see a urologist, had a biopsy, and I had prostate cancer with a PSA of 2.5. And the point the doctor made was that you have to watch for the doubling rate or the acceleration of the PSA number. And I'm not the only guy I know who had actually had cancer with a PSA under 4.
Yeah.
That's my comment.
Mike, thank you so much. Dr. Downs, comment from you.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for your call, and you're making that really important point. So he's definitely raising a great point. So while the threshold of 4 is an easier number to kind of convey to a large population, we also look at something called PSA velocity, and that's the rate of PSA change over a specific time point. So he's right, to go from PSA of 1 to 2.5 in 1 year is greater than the threshold of being over 0.75. And just a few technical words, so PSA velocity means basically how rapid the PSA increases, but that's before the diagnosis of cancer. PSA doubling time is how rapidly the PSA doubles, usually after you've had cancer and after you've had treatment. So they're kind of similar in some ways, but they're totally separate time points in a patient's prostate cancer journey.
You know, as I listened to Mike and listened to some of our other callers, I didn't hear anything about symptoms. Didn't sound like Mike had any outward symptoms. Is that often the case?
Another really good point. So prostate cancer has no symptoms. So when we talked about the different reasons for an elevated PSA, one of them being enlarged prostate does have symptoms. So that's someone who comes in and they're going to the bathroom a lot, or they wake up in the middle of the night, or their urinary stream is not as powerful. And that person often doesn't have prostate cancer, whereas the person who does can come in and, Larry, it's not uncommon for them, you know, they have a PSA that's 5 or 6, and we have this conversation. And they're going, well, gee, doc, what do you mean? Like, I just lost 20 pounds. I felt the best I have in the last 10 years. You know, I'm like weightlifting, I'm cycling. And they're exactly right. It has no symptoms. Now, the good thing for that in this country is because we do screen, we're able to detect before symptoms. If we go back to the Caribbean or other places where they don't screen, men do show up with symptoms. I can't pee. I've got blood in my urine. and it's because the cancer is now invading local structures.
Oh.
But in the USA, normally a person feels great, and the only abnormality is the blood test.
Mike, thanks again. Let's go to Pearl in Fox Valley next. Hi, Pearl.
Hi. Just a little bit of family history. My husband and his father both had prostate cancer surgery when they were in their mid-50s. My husband's maternal grandfather was stage 4 in his early 60s. Now, I have a son who's in his late 30s, and what should he be doing with his doctor in terms of PSA tests and things of that nature? Because it seems like he's got a really strong family history of prostate cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a great question and really kind of looks at the genetics and family lineage of prostate cancer. And so this is where maybe the rule book or the guidebook, kind of to the masses may not apply. So I'll go back for a sec. So technically, and being real technical about it, when we think about the genetic risk factors for prostate cancer in a family history like this, most of the time the patients are even younger. So they're not in their 50s. They tend to be in their 40s. So they're really young. So, but when I see such a density of families who, you know, family members who've gotten it at such an early age, then I would probably go old school, and I would recommend for your son to have a conversation with his or her primary care about getting screened at 40. And I think getting an early PSA and seeing that that value is hopefully lower than, I would say, 1 would be very reassuring. And then I would probably now look at screening every 2 years. It's a little bit off of script because this isn't a typical case. If they were really, really concerned, they could look at cancer centers like ours to meet with a genetic screening professional to kind of draw out the family tree and see if there were other tests that should be ordered. If it were a woman, right, we have the BRCA gene, so you could be tested for that. We don't have that gene in men yet, but there may be some, you know, they may test for like a BRCA in a male, and that may be helpful. But I would just sum it up again. I would say I would definitely have a deep conversation about getting screened, old school style, probably in the 40s. If it's less than 1, I'd leave it alone and screen in 2 years. And if he really wanted to drop the family tree, would be to look at probably a cancer center and a geneticist to kind of mark things out and find out if there are early markers that would be helpful.
And Pearl, thank you again for calling. And Dr. Downs, maybe talk about the UW School of Medicine and Public Health Cancer Center and what all is, you bring a lot of different people into this, don't you?
Yeah, Larry, thanks for that that opportunity to share. Yeah, so when you look at healthcare centers and definitely cancer centers, they really get graded very stringently. And so we have the highest distinction of a comprehensive cancer center. We're proud we're the only comprehensive cancer center in the state of Wisconsin. And to reach those metrics, you have to have everything. You have to have not only good physicians who see you in the office and take care of you, you have to have research that's actually making discoveries and helping to cure cancers. You have to have that not only in the clinical realm, but also in the basic science realm. You need to be active in certain clinical trials to give the next new promising agents to patients to find out what will be the next greatest and latest cure, hopefully. And then to have the support that patients need in terms of like navigators and social workers, and because it really is a journey. And we have, you know, some of our kind of, they shouldn't be unsung heroes, but, you know, our nurses and our technicians and, you know, our community outreach folks are just phenomenal because they're actually going into the community before a cancer diagnosis and educating people. But we really look at it as a full team approach. And our cancer center director, Dr. Howard Bailey, really got a great team, and not just for prostate, but for all cancers. And we really want to be the cancer center for the entire state of Wisconsin. You know, that's really maybe a lofty goal, but it's really something that we hold near and dear to our heart.
Wow. Thanks for that, for those comments, Dr. Downs. I want to give a couple of other people a chance to visit. Rob in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Rob. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I've got a question about any studies that would show any kind of a correlation between prostate cancer surgery and peripheral neuropathy. I've had the surgery, and subsequent to that, I've got peripheral neuropathy, and I just don't know if that's coincidental or
I've read
some stuff that it might be. I'm not sure.
Dr. Downs?
Yeah, and I definitely would want to kind of know where the peripheral neuropathy is located, and then also kind of know if he'd received any medications that may have contributed. So I'll just kind of do my best to kind of handle this question or answer it to the best of my ability. So when I think about the surgery and having a peripheral neuropathy, and what does that mean? That would be like in, let's say in your distal, your feet or your legs, where they feel kind of numb and they tingle a little bit. That would be a neuropathy. And when you have a surgery, we have you in positions where sometimes, although we do our best to pad you well, that sometimes that pressure against a nerve long-term could lead to a peripheral neuropathy. If he's referring to something like maybe in his fingers or his hands where the sensation is different, that's rare from surgery unless there's a real hyperextension of an arm or something. That tends to be more related to different chemotherapy agents that we give for a lot of different cancers. So those are some reasons. Where it's hard to really get to the bottom of it is in a true trial to kind of figure it out. We don't kind of go into a trial knowing if we can figure out if someone's got peripheral neuropathy. We kind of find that out based on kind of reported series of surgeries or medications. So there isn't a one-on-one link as closely as I wish I could share with him, but those are some of the possibilities. I would definitely look into things like, meeting with a nutritionist and also maybe a physical therapist. There's some things that maybe the standard medical answer to things are not very good, unfortunately, and that's where I think the other medical fields, whether it be physical therapy or acupuncture, et cetera, I know you got an MD talking about acupuncture, but could be very, very helpful.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. John in Milwaukee, do you have a quick question?
Hello.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with prostate cancer about 6 years ago, and we did a biopsy. We've done two biopsies and an MRI of prostate, and the biopsies have been like 1 out of 12 cores, like 3%. The MRI looked fine, so we're just kind of watching it for now, and eventually I have to make a decision whether to have surgery. And my doctor is a surgeon, but I also went to see a doctor who does, looks like a cryogenic freezing of the prostate.
Wonder what that's like. Yeah, thanks, John, for that question. What's that freezing treatment?
Yeah, so John, thanks for your question. So I'll summarize a little bit. So I think John said he was diagnosed 6 years ago with prostate cancer, underwent two biopsies, and only one out of the 12 cores was positive with 3%. And he's had some MRI scans which of the prostate, which are now really good. They weren't good 10 years ago. Now they're really spectacular. And his doctor is observing him. We would call that fancy word would be active surveillance. And then he's also spoken with another healthcare provider about cryogenic or cryotherapy freezing. So I'll start with the freezing.
You only have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
So it's it's got a high rate of erectile dysfunction, and he's got a well-observed cancer. He should just be followed and not treated at this point. His doctor knows what he's doing. Keep getting a PSA, you know, 3 to 4 times a year, and an MRI scan, you know, probably every other year. Don't do the freezing. Not for this disease. He'll get more side effects than he will get cured.
Dr. Downs, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I appreciate it very much.
Larry, thank you for having us. If I can give one shout-out to an upcoming event we have in our community, it's November 10th, and we're going to be at Second Baptist Church from 10 to 12 noon, giving detailed prostate cancer talks, specifically with African-American men in Madison, Wisconsin.
Thank you for that, and thank you all for listening.